Hello.
Welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. In this episode, kind of a continuation of food issues, but focusing more on.
We're focusing on the gut part of the food multiverse.
Yes, the gut part of the food multiverse.
Which, by the way, did you know that there's an intimate connection between your mind and your stomach? The gut-mind connection.
The gut-mind connection.
Yes.
Okay, I think I heard of that before. It makes sense.
And you mentioned gagging when you don't like things
Yes.
on two previous episodes. Can you describe again how it feels for you, what the visceral reaction is for you for gagging for people who haven't heard that yet?
So if I try to eat something and my body doesn't accept the texture, it will pretty much immediately cause gagging when I start eating the thing. When I try to swallow it, I'll feel myself gagging. And it's really hard for other people to understand because sometimes they think I'm being dramatic, but I've definitely noticed it's like something sort of like a natural instinct reaction, yeah.
So, before I get into that, because we have an answer for why this happens to you, which we have been looking for a little
Oh,
bit,
yes.
the thing you have to know about the brain-gut-gut-brain microbiome connection is that your gut is technically a second brain. It is the most complex organ, secondly after the brain.
Okay.
And there's something called the vagus nerve, which a lot of people know about because of cortisol. So, a lot of people think there's a vagus nerve responses or things you can do with your collarbone and stuff that people talk about calming themselves down. But the vagus nerve actually goes all the way from the top to the bottom of you. It is the highway of communication between your brain and your stomach.
Okay.
And it has all sorts of receptors and it communicates. And what's interesting about the way that your brain and your gut communicate is that about 80 to 90% of the information is going from your gut to your brain. Only 10% is going back, which means that a huge part of how you feel, your mental health, which makes sense, you are what you eat, comes from tiny little microorganisms in your stomach, in your gut, in your intestines,
Oh, okay.
which is quite cool.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, for example, the connection between when you start eating,
Yeah.
and then it takes a little while for the feedback to come that you're full.
Yes.
Or what you want to eat, or what you might be craving, or whether you're stressed. These things all are about communications within your body as interoception, which a lot of people on the spectrum and a lot of other neurodivergent people have difficulty with anyway.
Yeah.
We've talked about why this might be. It's still difficult to figure out whether it's because of the stress that people encounter as neurodivergent people in early life that makes it more difficult for them to understand what they're feeling. Or connect to how they're feeling
Yeah.
because they've been told they shouldn't feel that way. Especially coming back to the gagging thing. The whole point of gagging, it's linked to the body's protective mechanisms. And
Okay.
so because people on the spectrum tend to have more sensitive nervous systems, all sorts of other things. So this is why sensory things are much more prevalent around anyone, especially people on the spectrum, but people who are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
Part of that has to do with the vagus nerve, which is quote-unquote overreacting to certain things. Your stomach is going, no, but the reaction is it's going to kill me.
Huh.
And it tells your brain this.
Yeah, so that's where the gagging comes from.
Yep, it's also triggered by memories, by stress. It can get worse, which is why when we were talking about all the social anxieties and inherent concerns that some people might have around food, because it is such a universal thing and because it can be a communal thing, there's so many things that can affect the way that your stomach and your gut and your brain communicate, and that has to do with how well you sleep, if you have too much cortisol because of prior experiences. In your case, since you've had certain textural sensitivities from the get-go, your body's already anxious about anything to do with being perceived around
Yes,
food.
yes.
Which triggers a fight and flight response, which makes it then more difficult for your body to process food.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting, and it's making me wish that I knew this before. So many times where people would say things to me like, "Oh, so you don't like vegetables or this, or you don't want to be healthy." That's one thing that would bother me a lot.
It's not just in your head. Your stomach, on some level, your gut understands the stress that is being communicated from all those interactions where they said these things.
Yeah.
And it prepares itself now to be stressed out.
Yeah.
It's not your fault.
I know. And it...
Scientifically, it is not your fault. We have proof.
Yes. I just wish that I hadn't been unfairly told all these things or judged in all these ways. And
it's unfair.
It's really unfair. And then because it would become kind of a butt of a joke. One of my dad's friends, he would be like, oh, well, this has vegetables in it, so Gino's not going to want it or something. And I'm just like...
That dude needs to get a life. What are you doing? Bullying people. You were a kid, adolescent, maybe.
I guess.
Yeah, we won't keep his name in there, but this friend specifically should get a life. What are you doing?
Yeah, I agree.
It's weird.
When you were talking about how the brain remembers, and then the gut is kind of already in sort of a fight mode, it makes so much sense when I think of when that person would tell me those things. Or people in general. Now those, because I'm playing it in my head, like the movie of the brain having these memories and then the gut defensively reacting to those memories. They became the memories. I get it that this person thought that they were just making some kind of joke or something.
Rewired your brain gut biome. That's not okay.
No. Yeah.
And what we talked about insomnia on a different episode, one of the things about the fight and flight response that people have only recently started to understand, when you can properly sleep, your brain dreams so it can process certain chemicals and emotions, etc. Your gut is doing the exact same thing because it chemically communicates with your brain. And for women specifically, it also is affected by hormones quite a bit. So it processes hormonal changes in the gut. There's a state called rest and digest. So you have fight and flight, eat too much, you might eat too little. All of these things are the result of your brain and your gut going, how do we take care of this person now, depending on all the chemicals that we have? And the vagus nerve is connecting all of them. And the GI tract, which goes all the way from your throat all the way down to your anus. I think 70% of your immune system, how it's doing, comes from your GI tract and the information it's getting through the gut, then through the vagus nerve back to your brain. So it also affects mental health. It's all incredibly intertwined.
Yeah.
If you can't sleep, and you made this point when you talked about the professional you talked to, when you were looking at sleep, they recommended not eating a certain amount before a certain time. And it's because you're, for you specifically, and for many people, you need to allow your body to chill out.
Yeah.
You're resting and digesting. The same thing your brain does when you sleep in the dream, your body and your gut is doing with the digestion, with the chemical overturn, all of it.
Yeah.
All these tiny little microbiomes, which, by the way, every single living thing on this planet has, which is fascinating. Huh. Doesn't matter whether mammal, amphibian, anything. All of them have their own little digestive thing.
Yeah, wow. So
everyone shares, is whether it's body, whether it's cells, how they communicate between what input they're getting and what they need to get later and how to work around that. And that's just very cool.
Yeah. It explains a lot, for sure. I wish there were more understanding or acknowledgement in the medical field, I think particularly the Western medical field, of how things are connected, the mind and body. When I started having these issues 4 or 5 years ago, I went to my doctor here and he didn't make any connection at all to the brain. He just was focusing on the gut, and then he had me do a colonoscopy, which was an incredibly extensive and also costly procedure.
The way that I think Western medicine, which has many, many benefits, right? Vaccines, very important. There is a categorization of how to study a body, which is not holistic in Western medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about this before. I have Ehlers-Danlos. That is a multi-systemic chronic illness. There are certain symptoms that pop up that don't look like they're related to anything else, and one of them is gut issues. I have them also. And there's times where my face will turn red and they go, oh, it's inflammation, and then I'm burping. That seems to be a gut problem. But then I will have cold feet or some other thing. or I have pain in something else, and they go, well, there's so many symptoms that are multisystemic, we can't connect them all. Once you realize, in my case, it's Ehlers-Danlos, you go, oh, it's because connective tissue makes up everything, and my connective tissue is essentially silly string, so that makes a lot of sense. So it has certain responses that you do. I don't gag, but if something doesn't work out well, my brain and my stomach go, no, then communicates, in my case with Ehlers-Danlos, to everything else that something's not okay, and it all freaks out on its own.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You're like, I'm fine, and your gut and your brain are going, we know you're fine, but we don't feel fine because all the sensory information, because everything else is trying to take care of you because we told them you weren't fine, is now freaking out. So no, we're not fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, this whole thing about not looking at things holistically, do you find that as you learn more about your autism, do you find that more difficult to get back from other people or professionals, the idea of a holistic idea of autism rather than treatments?
Yeah, I think it's something that most people just don't seem to quite understand yet, of changing the framing from, instead of trying to fix it, to try to work with it, working with instead of treating. But I think it's just been so ingrained, it feels like it's still hard to get them to make that shift sometimes. I think it is, in general, starting, particularly with, because I know you asked about medical professionals and such. I mean, I don't even tend to disclose with medical professionals.
Oh, really? Your general practitioner?
I mean, he knows, but I don't know if it does more harm than good. And I don't even talk about it anymore. I told him once a few years ago. He didn't really say much about it. He was like, oh, interesting. Like, I told him about my blog or whatnot. I mean, I have heard from people that they tell their doctors it's like they're usually taken less seriously or kind of infantilized a little bit. Or maybe the doctor will be trying to fix their autism, which is, I don't think it's happened at least to this point with me, but it's something that I could see happening. So yeah, I'm very skeptical to tell most people, including doctors.
As someone who's had it and is recovering from an eating disorder as well, I can relate. I don't mind telling doctors I have ADHD, in part because a lot of them know very little about it, which is not their fault. Same thing with autism. A lot of general practitioners are sat maybe one afternoon, two, unless they specialize, in front of a PowerPoint talking about, here are the things that you should be looking out for. And then they're sent off to learn about the whole entire rest of the body. They should be better at referring other people, certain general practitioners, but that is where they come from. They're there as the first line of defense. So that person can't learn as much as a specialist can.
Mm-hmm.
But I would tell people about ADHD, especially as a woman, a lot of them would be surprised. Go, oh, you're sitting still now. I'm like, yes, I'm on medication. And they're like, oh, cool. Yep. So do you still need this medication? I'm like, yes, I'm fine because I have the medication. Mm-hmm. It's not a curable thing.
Do you ever get that everyone has a little ADHD? Because people tell me that sometimes and kind of turns me off.
Oh, I used to, and I just shut it down now. The people I let around me, unless I'm at, you know, working with someone or I meet someone in a bar, I think I have gotten to the point where I let my Eastern European bitch face come up. I'm not judging them. I just look at them with such nonchalance and confusion combined.
Yeah.
Why would you ask me this question? It's not even judgmental. Cognitive block. Mm-hmm. And I've adopted that now. Because there's enough information out there, I just go, oh.
Yeah.
Do you have any understanding? No, okay, I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have ADHD themselves, but they don't understand it. I made sort of a face, too. I just remember that was my gut reaction.
It's the gut reaction. That is the thing. What you were talking about in our last food episode, when I think you specifically said something along the lines of, I wish I knew what it was or how it worked. There is some part of you that does. Your other brain does. There's certain things with stress or anxiety where maybe don't trust that reaction all the time. And that takes training. And I guess for you specifically, I'd imagine difficulty understanding whether you're hungry or not. Is that a thing for you, or whether you're full?
I think being full, I can tell, although it takes a while. I think there is a delay. So last night it happened where I was out for dinner with my dad and my sister, and I feel like I got too full. If I had felt the signal sooner, I would have stopped eating sooner. And I just remember being in my head a little bit, like, I wish I had stopped sooner because now I feel so full. And I was worried for a while because I was like, I hope I'm going to be able to keep all this down.
Do you think that's also because I have this with ADHD? I will forget if I'm talking to people and eating at the same time.
Yeah, that can happen too. I think that does happen also. And I think it's also like a delayed reaction to the body's getting full, but it's not telling me yet. And then I stop eating and then a few minutes later, it's like, oh, I'm full.
That thing mothers tell kids, right? Some kid goes, oh, I still want to eat. Can I have a third bowl of whatever? Which, if they do, that's fine. Mm-hmm. A lot of moms will say, wait 10, 15, 20 minutes, because that says the satiety index, which is what mm-hmm. it's called. It takes a while for the vagus nerve to let you know that you're full. And it does this through dopamine and serotonin, which is why a lot of people also connect food to feelings. And it, well, not adversely, but say for me, and I don't recommend this for anyone, one of the reasons that I think I developed an eating disorder was because if I didn't eat enough, it did make me quieter around people. But also, there was a bit of a high, which happens when you go into a state of ketosis, which again is terrible for your body. Don't do it. And that is when you don't have enough carbohydrates in your body or sugars, mm-hmm. and it starts eating protein.
Because that's like what the keto diet or the paleo diet is, right?
Yes, and there's so many misconceptions about this because it gives people this feeling where they're slightly high and slightly more focused. And side note, there have been some studies for people with seizures or children with seizures or certain people in late stages of Alzheimer, I believe, where that can be used intermittently, but that has to be done under medical supervision.
Okay, so it's not, you can't just like say, oh, I'm going to try the keto diet and just like stop eating carbs.
You will. We'll also get to carbs in a second because there's a lot of misinformation about carbs and mm-hmm. your gut and all of that, especially for neurodivergent people. I mean, you said in the last episode that you love noodles.
Yes, I do love noodles.
They sustain you. They make you happy. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that. That's a carb. We need yes. carbs. We need sugar and energy to thrive, right? Yeah. But there are ways, and we will again talk about it towards the end of the episode. There are tricks that you can help your body with to absorb certain kinds of carbs if you don't like brown bread or all sorts of grains. We can help you with that. You can keep eating your white bread mm. and still be gut happy. We will help you with this.
We'll help you. Great.
But the point is, there's the keto thing, it's not sustainable. And it's part of this fad of using diet as a way of controlling people through capitalism. We see this specifically with women. Because undernourished women, as we were talking about, if you think about what happens in your gut and your brain, you no longer have the, well, one, energy, the actual calories to be able to sustain yourself so your body stops doing certain things, like producing a certain amount of hormone or being able to digest things properly, slower digestion, because your body doesn't think, it doesn't know where its next food bit is coming from. So it slows everything down metabolically. Because it thinks it's starving. Mm. And that cuts off essential functions, like critical thinking, all of these other things. Mm. And so historically, we've seen whenever, and it's happening now, we're seeing a resurgence of what looks a little bit like early 2000s eating disorder popular culture in our films, and what's on social media, the way that women are supposed to look. And now men are seeing it too. You have to look a certain way more and more. And it's because they're trying to distract the people who would otherwise be overturning certain aspects of capitalism and patriarchy over or questioning them and literally depriving them of the nutrients or teaching them to deprive themselves of nutrients or having other members of society tell them that you can't look like this or that you're not important unless you starve yourself or you don't listen to your body. Or as a neurodivergent person, if you gag and they tell you you're stupid and you end up thinking about this for a long time, and then what other space in your brain do you have?
Yeah.
So occupied, in your example, even if it's not an eating disorder, with I'm going to a food thing, I want to talk about this, or there's someone there that I think would really benefit from me talking to them about this or that thing. It's difficult to keep that mental space when you're so anxious.
Yeah.
So concerned. And feel like you can't eat or that you're going to gag. and you're nervous that you can't make that difference.
Yeah.
It's such a subtle thing. It's in diet culture, it's communal, but because it affects every single part of our physiology and our brain, it affects the way we go out into the world. And it's such a simple, again, but complex thing.
Yeah. It makes so much sense now, just thinking about everything I feel before I go to like a gathering with my neighbors, for example. I have all the social anxiety that's going on. My brain is preheated sort of because of that. And then I have all the food stuff. And what if they serve something and I can't eat it? And how is it going to go? What comment are they going to make? It just becomes a whole thing where it really shouldn't be. In an ideal world, I should be just relaxed and just focused on enjoying myself. I mean, now it just makes so much sense, too, that the brain remembers these previous experiences and that the gut reacts to that.
Yeah, it mirrors it. Everything that your brain does, your gut, your second brain, mirrors it.
Yeah.
When people talk about being angry, they also talk about stomach clenching.
Yes, okay.
Or butterflies in the stomach, gut feeling, you know, I feel anxious, I feel like my stomach is in knots. All of these things, all these idioms and euphemisms that people use in everyday life. It is multicultural and it's gone on since the Egyptians and the Greeks, they write about it.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about it. It's that primal. There's ancient civilizations who built entire things that have to do with gut physiology, and some of that has to do with seasons and harvest. But a lot of the things that they wrote down that have then become part of our everyday parlance often have to do with the gut.
Yeah.
I think it was either the Greeks or the Romans. They used to think the soul used to live in your intestine.
I could see that.
Yeah. I think that's quite valid, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know where the soul lives, but I know it exists somewhere.
Yeah.
In a non-spiritual way. I'm Russian, so soul, dusha, it has to be there. Don't mean this in a religious way at all. I mean this in a deeply Eastern European manner. But again, as you said in the last episode, it is so important, and you have to do it every day. And it distracts you from the things, not the food, but the way that you've been taught to not listen to your brain-gut microbiome, that now you're having to retrain yourself. Do you feel like you have to retrain yourself?
Yeah, I feel, I do, for sure. This happens, of course, in, I think, with food and, like, being able to just acknowledge, okay, I can't eat this, and this is why, and now I have even more scientific data to back it up. But I have to really be okay with that and really feel confident in that and expressing that. And then also there's the whole part of being able to train myself to not be so affected personally or not take it personally when someone makes a comment. Oh, I guess you don't like vegetables or like whatever comment it is. To really reframe it. Train my brain to understand that that's their ignorance instead of it's like I'm morally wrong or something or I should have eaten this. I know people are going to have this problem until we get to a point where it's not so societally drilled that you have to eat whatever someone offers you or put it on your plate even if you're not going to eat it like what we were talking about last episode.
Because you don't have to. No one's going to smite you. There's not going to be a sinking pit of sand that instantly appears underneath you or something.
Yeah.
It's not my circus, not my monkeys. The person who's upset at you for not eating their food should have asked you first.
Yes.
When you talk about things that you're retraining yourself, were you aware that you felt it somewhere other than your head? Or did you feel so anxious that you kind of numbed yourself out?
I think I numbed myself out a little bit. I knew there was some sort of connection with the head and the gut, but I think after you explained it, I didn't really know that about the vagus nerve and how the memories of those things are actually translating to the gut. And because I used to just think about it as being in the head. I mean, in the last couple of years, I had learned, oh, okay, there's something with texture. There's a sensitive, the texture thing is related to being autistic. And that was already a huge breakthrough. And then just like, and then knowing this extra information about how it literally gets communicated to the gut through the vagus nerve. And then that's what causes the gagging. It's just like now I feel like I have a lot more information that'll help me retrain my brain and just be more comfortable. Because I think the main thing in this case that's coming up is that I feel like I need to get to a point where I'm pretty generally comfortable and confident in knowing what I can't eat, and not just knowing, but knowing that it's okay to not eat these things, that I don't have to put everything on my plate. I think it all ties in together with the brain and other social things that I don't have to like feel pressured to do. I can see how it all connects.
And I'm sorry you have to do that, because that's what trauma does for everyone, right? It's not your fault, but it ends up being your responsibility, and I feel that also, and it sucks, and I'm sorry for everyone who also has to experience that. Keep doing the good work.
Keep doing the good work, everybody.
We all know people who don't do the good work, and they just cause it for other people, so yeah. Don't become a person. Don't you are doing a person. Great job. I'm sorry you have to do a great job, but you're doing a great job. And again, for you, a lot of autistic people do have what other people call overreactive sensitivities. Maybe, you know, certain things do overreact, but all of that communicates to your body in ways that may seem more extreme to other people.
Yeah, exactly.
Gagging is such a primal reflex. One, it's incredibly unpleasant, as you've described.
Yes.
No one wants to do that. It feels horrific, right?
Yeah. Baffles me that people would think it's something I do just to be dramatic, put a character on or something, because it's not pleasant. It's not a character I would ever want to play. It's not like something I'd ever want to feel.
That'd be an interesting skit, though, to play with at some point, mm-hmm. is have a character who gags because it makes them interesting. I think that would be a really funny little bit, not in real life, but as a comedic character.
Yeah.
Just to show how silly that idea is.
Yeah.
Because I guess that's what it is for some people. They feel, there are people who make other people feel uncomfortable, maybe not by gagging, but by saying something rude or getting attention, and it gives them a reaction, and then they feel important. This is obviously not you. So perhaps this is why other people go, oh, you're gagging because you want to make everyone else feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
One of the things that is a huge indicator of your overall health, whether it's your gut, your brain, all of the things, because they're intertwined, for someone who's neurodivergent, is inflammation. As we have discussed on many of these podcast episodes, we neurodivergent people are more prone to stress, which means higher cortisol, a lot more adrenaline, affect our digestion, affects the way our brain works, and being comfortable. So what you were talking about, Gino, about getting to a place where you can feel less stressed out.
Mm.
Mentally and physically, which we now know is very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In order to continue to grow and learn about yourself in a healthy way, you have to get your brain and your gut to a point where it's not reacting to everything.
Yeah.
You have to get to a point, say if you're undernourished, you have to get to a point where your brain can start repairing itself, or your organs can start repairing themselves. If, say, you have an eating disorder of any kind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if your only interactions with food are stress or tend to be stressful. In order for you to be empowered to do the best and empower yourself, you have to think about you as a being and what you physically need to retrain that. And a lot of that comes down to your own personal decisions about food.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I'm saying, I know it's very difficult, all neurodivergent people listening, you have to forget what everyone else is telling you.
Yeah.
Here are the actual facts. I'm not a doctor. I do know this, though. If you have any nutritional deficits or other problems that require a medical professional, please keep that in mind and talk to your nutritionist or doctor. Outside of that, there are basic components you need. You need to eat vegetables. I don't care what kind of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
People used to say you have to have 5 a day because people like to do days versus a certain amount of time. There was an article a few years ago that said essentially you're aiming for 30 vegetables in a serving of about your fist in a week, whatever that looks like for you. So you want to aim to have vegetables every day. However, if you're having an off day, if you're doing something else, you are aiming for that larger number of around 30 per week.
Mm-hmm.
Things that help with inflammation of the gut. So lots of fibrous vegetables have something inherent in them called a prebiotic. Everyone knows about probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
You see them on yogurts. Acidophilus, I think. I don't...
Yeah.
If you're Greek and you hear this and I'm not pronouncing it correctly, I am sorry to you and your culture, but that's how I read it. There are some studies that show that they can be helpful in certain instances. I take them, for example, and it does help me, but you can't take them on their own and not do anything else and hope that it works out for you.
Yeah.
Probiotics are the things that cultivate and feed microbiomes. So yogurts, cultures, they're cultivating your microbiome. They are making them cultured so they can say witty things in your stomach like Oscar Wilde. That is what the probiotics are for, yeah. Right? The prebiotics are things that help stimulate your gut, things with fiber and certain kinds of vitamins. Now, there is a lot of misconception about processed carbohydrates and non-processed carbohydrates. And fun fact, my father loves bread baking, and he went on a very cute course with this lovely French man. And apparently, one of the things that, at least in the US, when they package bread to make it long-lasting, they take a lot of the vitamins and nutritional stuff out of it because it doesn't keep as long. And then they get packaged into vitamin supplements.
Oh, wow, okay.
For shelf life, they take out the vitamins, and then you get them back. You have to buy them from the pharmacy.
Huh, yeah.
Which I just found interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Back to, if you like white bread, a lot of neurodivergent people like white bread. I'm not one of them. I need things to have crunchy things and textures and grit to it. But if you like your really bland foods, and I don't mean that as a criticism, if you want plain, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You have to make sure that you have some form of kind of nut or seed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see.
And those things tend to not be huge texture problems. If you have pumpkin seeds and stuff, omega seeds.
Yeah, seeds for me, it's usually not a problem. Yeah.
It helps your body process the sugar that comes from that pure carbohydrate with some of the healthy fats and the protein. Even if you just want plain whatever, say once a day out of all your meals or snacks, something will be just plain white pasta with steamed or boiled broccoli or vegetable of your choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have some protein. It can be plant-based. It can be actual meat, although some meats do cause inflammation if you eat too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, but things like seeds and monounsaturated fats do help, and it helps your body not turn all of that into sugar immediately, which is what causes inflammation.
Yeah.
It doesn't help, but it can contribute to you feeling stressed out. It doesn't cause stress, but if your gut is going, all the sugar, I've done it too much, your brain will go, I'm not feeling well.
That makes sense. Yeah, I've felt that before after having too much sugar.
Quick disclaimer about if you look up neurodivergent people and food on the internet, you will get a certain amount of how my food cured my ADHD or my autism or autism comes from food or whatever. So
here we go.
Now that you've covered this episode, you understand why people might think that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what they're talking about is an exacerbation of symptoms because perhaps this person is not eating enough or eating too many sugars and it might trigger dysregulation or exacerbate it. And what people are reacting to when they say it cures autism is it just makes symptoms or certain parts of whatever your neurodivergence is slightly better to deal with for them. Diet is incredibly important, especially for neurodivergent people because we're much more sensitive.
Yeah.
Don't get discouraged when you look that up because that will come up. People will be like, I did a quote-unquote keto diet and it cured my autism. That's not how that works.
That's not how that works.
What that tells you is that there's something about elements of that diet that help, but it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
It's not about curing or even helping. It's about, my body likes this for some reason. Inflammation as well. Turmeric.
Turmeric.
It's a lovely yellow color. Mm-hmm. Make sure you don't get it over everything because it will stain.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that if you don't cook with, turmeric and rosemary are great anti-inflammatory spices and herbs.
Mm.
So is ginger,
mm-hmm.
and ginseng, mint and peppermint as well. If you cook, say, your tofu or you sprinkle it in a sauce or whatever, it really does help with inflammation.
Oh, okay, good to know.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those spices that I find people don't have issues with unless it's ridiculous. You know, I think some people don't like curry because they don't like spice.
Mm-hmm.
And by spice, I mean heat.
Yeah.
And there's different kinds of heat. There's heat that is what other people would call spicy, which makes your tongue feel a certain way. Yeah. I love it. But turmeric is one of those spices that has heat in it, but it doesn't do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do find when I cook with it for people, especially I have some friends on the spectrum who are a bit nervous about eating certain foods that look, and turmeric makes things look bright yellow.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why someone who hasn't seen it yet goes, I don't know about that. That's a very bright yellow.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it has this nutty, sweet, herby quality to it. I personally have found that almost everyone who hasn't had it loves. So
yeah,
something to keep in mind. And rosemary is just great on anything. I don't know a single person who doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're listening and you don't like it, please let us know, because I'd be interested in meeting you. But things like that, it just add a bit of spice to your life. It doesn't have to be hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are small things that make your gut microbiome happy.
Yeah.
Part of that comes from natural flavorings that have been used throughout history, and there's a reason. If they are continuing to do it, there is a reason. Do you have any specific, you know, questions about food and tips?
Nothing that I can think of now. I mean, that was a lovely explanation of the spices and everything. That makes a lot of sense.
Ooh, I have one more. Okay, everyone. If you find yourself feeling gassy, as in you're burping and it's uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
it happens a lot for people with Ehlers-Danlos. There is something, there's different brands of it. We'll put it in the footnotes. It's called Simethicone. And what it does is you take it after meals and it combines all the bubbles.
Okay.
Because bloating is often due to inflammation and stress, can also cause people to not want to eat. I've had this problem.
Yeah.
I've also found that it makes my brain feel foggy, which now we know why. It just makes it easier to then eat something and get over it. So we'll put that in the notes too. Again, talk to your physician if you're on other medications and stuff, but it's mostly harmless if you follow the instructions. I found out about it in the last year, and it's been a game changer.
So things like, for example, thing you mentioned curry, because curry is something that I used to enjoy a lot, and now I'm afraid to eat it, because the last couple times I've eaten it, it has caused bloating, and I was wondering if I tried that if maybe I would be able to tolerate it again.
It might be helpful. It also depends on what, do you have a, because there's so many different kinds of curry.
Yeah.
Part of it is acidity for a lot of people if it's tomato-based.
I think it's a tomato-based, because I would have usually like yellow curry, and sometimes chicken masala would have, I guess it's sort of a reddish, orangish kind of curry.
You've talked about tomatoes before. There are a surprising amount of people who have certain inflammatory responses to raw tomatoes or lots of tomatoes at once. If you are someone who can't tolerate tomatoes but occasionally find that you're feeling weird after eating something with tomato in it,
mm-hmm.
often you shouldn't be eating something with tomatoes on an empty stomach. You want to have something before.
Oh, okay.
Because acidity irritates your stomach lining.
I see.
It's why if you drink, if anyone's ever had orange or lemon juice
mm-hmm.
or lemonade on an empty stomach and you just feel weird afterwards,
oh my
that's
God.
Exactly why. So it could be that for people who like tomato-based curry, you need to line it with something else first.
I see. Okay, that makes sense.
The simethicone, if it's okay for you to have, might help.
Okay.
The seeds would also help. And it's very personal to every single body. So things that might work for me or Gino might not work for you, and that is
mm-hmm.
completely fine. Giving food, sharing food, talking about food, lots of fun. Shaming other people for not liking certain kinds of foods or assuming they will like it.
Or just
making
them
feel
weird.
It's just going to cause stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all just trying to eat here and trying to feed our gut-brain connection, which is so essential to everything. In a very stressful world, let's not make it more stressful.
I'll just leave like another little quote that I've been told. Like one of these little comments that people would make, you know. And this one happened recently, I won't name the person. I was eating, something had been served, it was like kind of like a turkey patty or something, and it had a tomato baked into it in the middle, and
my nemesis,
exactly. And so I managed to like eat around it, and I was enjoying the turkey thing, so I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And I'm like, okay, I could just eat around the tomato, and I wasn't expecting anyone to say anything. It's such a minor thing. Of course, this person that happens to be sitting next to me, I can tell she's looking at my, for whatever reason, she's really fascinated with my plate and what I'm doing with it. And she's like, you managed to eat around the tomato. Thanks.
Yes, I did. You have eyes. You saw. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm expecting a squire to come up and go, he ate around the tomato.
Yeah. And what am I supposed to, I didn't even know how to react. I'm like,
is that a magic trick? Magic trick?
Yeah.
It's such an odd thing. You ate around the tomato. Yes, I know I did. That was intentional.
That was intentional.
Thanks for noticing and talking about it and confirming that we all know what I did. Yes. Yeah. My gut brain will have no problems with that. No, we will not be thinking about this. Oh my god!
Now that's what comes up. Now, and the next time I have a meal with this person, I can see that coming up. I have to just remember.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Yeah, exactly.
Not my tomato.
Yeah, not my tomato. So, I know we've left you all with a lot of information to process. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you were able to get something out of it. I'm sure you'll be able to get many things.
I'll also make sure to add a few YouTube videos that I looked up just to see whether they were good condensed things for other people to watch. This information, put those there. There will be a little tab about cimethicone, which is the gassy stuff, and I'll write the things about the seeds down in case all this information at once was too much.
Yes, you can always come back and check.
Take care of your gut brain, everyone.
Yes, take care.